Infamous Indy presents the Digging Up Dillinger Project, featuring the Texas Crime Travelers and Travis Thompson. I'm your host, Joe Malillo. In the annals of American crime, few figures loom as large as John Dillinger. A mastermind of bank heists, his name became synonymous with brazen robberies and daring escapes. Questions of whether he escaped an FBI ambush and the whereabouts of his buried loot persevere. History offers one account, but there are whispers that tell us many more. Join us as we go digging up Dillinger. Everybody, welcome to Digging Up Dillinger. I'm your host, Joe Malillo, and you might not recognize my voice because we've been gone for so long, but we're back. Episode because we have some really good things to talk about, and really excited to share some news for the Dillinger nephews. They're here, Travis Thompson, Mike Thompson. Welcome, fellas. Welcome back.
Hey, welcome back.
Yep, we've been talking to each other over the last couple of months, but we just haven't made it to an episode, so we're here tonight to update everybody. We miss you. We haven't forgot.
Yes.
It's definitely something that doesn't go away for us in terms of whether or not we're doing something or trying to figure out the next step to try to do more investigation. Stuart Fillmore, man, he is blowing up. He might become a superstar, and we knew him way back when.
Yep. Wish him all the luck.
Yeah, he's on a couple of projects, which is part of the reason why, you know, no excuses are excuses, but, you know, part of the reason why we maybe haven't been as active is we've been trying to find time with all of us, including Stuart, and Stuart's been on a couple of projects. So he's going to be on a couple of TV shows from what we're hearing, and we're excited because we obviously love Stuart and we want the best for him. And I've always thought he's deserved all of that accolades because he's really good on TV. As you guys.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Travis, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks here?
Oh, man. Working, and I'm trying to get my own podcast kind of up and going. And it's going to be called Bloodlines and Badges. And I've, trying to get that going, trying to figure out, you know, what my first episode is going to be.
And well, we'll be. On a book. And what?
And working on a book with my dad. So.
Well, there we go. So, Mike, let's talk about this book. Let's announce everybody what this book is.
Well, the book is about kind of what we went through trying to exhume John to prove whether John's in the grave or not. Plus, a little history about John and the family. But it's a lot about what we went through in the last few years trying to prove whether it's John in the grave or not.
Yeah, and I think that's needed. Obviously, we speak a lot on here about that event, but ultimately, you guys need to be able to explain it for yourself in your own words. Who's helping you? What's the name of the book company? Or what's
we can't really say that right now.
Oh,
we
can't.
That part we can't say.
Yeah, and we do not have a book title right now, but we're finishing.
We're
up
working on it.
It's called a working book title. So how long have you guys been working on it now?
It's been
4 months, 3 months, something like that. Yeah.
Nice. Nice.
I would say, right. I mean, we started working on it right before we all went up to Crown Point and did when we got the.
Yeah. We'd been talking with him and kind of started. After the book, we get the book all together and it's out, and it looks, and it. They're going to do a documentary off the book.
Yes, that's the plan.
Oh my gosh, that's great news! And as you know, the more exposure we bring to the story, this is all this podcast is about, right? We're just trying to bring exposure to the story. That hey, why don't we just answer this one easy question that could solve a lot of questions and a mystery that's 91 years old now, right?
Yep, 91.
July 22nd, 1934, John Dillinger was allegedly shot and killed at the Biograph Theater.
And that one we'll never know until we get to dig him up and test DNA. But
yeah, hopefully we get to that.
It's just interesting that the FBI is still interested in us. I mean, it's our family. We ought to be able to dig it up and prove whether it's him or not, but they're still, for some reason, don't want that to happen.
Yeah. And me, as we're working on this book, me and Dad are going through the FBI files again, and we're finding, you know, it's still kind of hard to believe that there's so many files that are redacted or not even released to the public. So I'm kind of curious what they're hiding. I mean, informant at this point, they're all deceased, so there's no reason to hide their identity.
Now, only thing I ever could even come up with is they're not for sure, and they're afraid if it's not him, then people are going to wonder what else did they cover up.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. It opens Pandora's box. John's grave is like Pandora's box.
Yep.
It's also like Schrodinger's cat. You ever heard of that? You ever heard of Schrodinger's cat? Yeah. The idea is you never know. He could be in there. He could not be in there. There could be another body in there. But until we open it up, it could literally be all three of those things.
Yes.
So, yeah. You know, I think the FBI files, give us this little tidbit on if they're like what you're finding. What are you seeing? I mean, anything new? Because you guys, this is like the second time around that we're going through the files.
Well, so I found when we were going through it, I found from the very beginning in the FBI file, they're saying that there's a scar in the middle of John's upper lip. All the photos I'm seeing of him that we have in the family, I don't see a scar.
What do you mean scar? Like a cut, yeah. like a cleft lip?
Yeah,
like
I don't know. They don't really describe it. It said, and that's the first time I remember seeing it. And then the autopsy report doesn't have it, that there's a scar. I mean, the death mask we have looks like there's no scar on the upper lip, if that's supposedly him. So I don't know where the FBI got this description, which tells me, I mean, again, none of them ever laid eyes on him personally.
Sure.
So I don't know where they got this description from, unless it was from prison. Did he get in a fight in prison and he had like a cut and they just put scar, like for all eternity? That was what they described him as.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. That's also something new that I didn't even know. And there's a picture of John behind you, right? Like,
yeah.
Like I can't, I don't see a scar on his lip, on his upper lip at all. And we're seeing both sides of his lip right behind your head. So
yeah. One of the great things in the file is that they mentioned they were still looking for him in 1962. So why are you looking for a dead guy?
Yeah. I mean, that's always been one of the main pieces of evidence that we have, is that the FBI is talking about looking for him in 1962. So you read through that again.
We're still going through it.
There's like each section, there's like 160 to 70, 75 pages in each section. And there's like 50.
Yeah.
I think 57 sections.
Yeah.
So there's pages and pages and pages.
Yeah, at least 10,000 pages, dude. So,
and it's interesting the way, because it's each detective, each agent that's looking at it, is describing what they're doing at that time and everything. So it's pretty interesting, and and there's a lot of places that most people never heard of that they were at.
Yeah.
Like what? Any on the map?
There's some on the map.
There was a place in Texas that they went to.
Yeah.
And that's mentioned several times that they were at some kind of like a tourist destination or like a pull off.
Real close to Dallas.
Yeah, and it was when they were traveling to Tucson is when they stopped there, and they were seen by multiple people who identified them.
Like on their way to Tucson, where they eventually got arrested.
Yeah, and you can almost, how the files are, pretty much prove that John didn't go back to East Chicago from Florida to rob. Unfortunately, Officer O'Malley lost his life, but it wasn't from John. I mean, in the file that shows where he went to Tennessee, purchased a car,
and went to Tucson.
Yeah, so I don't see him in that time. Why would you go all the way to northern Indiana from Florida, then travel all the way back down to Tennessee, then go west?
Yeah, on the timeline, he couldn't have done it anyhow from the time he was in Daytona.
Yeah, we were having this conversation the other day, I was with somebody and they were like, you know, what is it about John? I thought he was a killer. And I was like, yeah, no, this is, if you listen to the podcast, we talk about this often, that there's no feasible way. And I was talking about it actually with my son and his teenage friends. They were like, yeah, but you could just get drive through the night. And I was like, yeah, but remember, the roads and the highways weren't as developed, and there's not like gas stations every, you know, 10 miles. Like
that, yeah. And they weren't open at night.
Yeah, they wasn't open all night like they are now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So everybody should be home and go to bed. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell my teenage son.
Yeah. Well, you know, going through these files, and then, you know, I'm going through this, working on the book, and then I see that Sean Hannity is going to be putting out a show on Fox Nation.
I saw that, right.
Yeah, and so I have a problem with some of the narrative that they're pushing. They're pushing, and I don't have a problem with Sean Hannity. I've watched his show through my adult life. I have an issue with it because they're going to be pushing what narrative? They're going to be pushing the FBI narrative. And I have a feeling they're going to be, you know, framing him as a killer when they're just regurgitating what the FBI put out.
And if they look at the files good,
they can almost
prove it themselves he wasn't there.
And I doubt they did any background. I doubt they did any research. They're just regurgitating what the FBI narrative put out. So I've reached out to Fox Nation several weeks ago. I mean, I texted everyone in the group when I was doing this. I've reached out to his producer, and I've got zero response back. I told him who I was. I didn't really say I was upset. I'm just wanting to make sure my family member is being, you know, portrayed appropriately.
Yeah, represented.
And I'm like, did you guys know that the FBI was still actively getting involved in our investigation and stopping us from exhuming the body, and that the FBI files said this and that, and zero response.
Why would they?
Yeah, and that just shows me that this is just a little money grab because true crime is, you know, hitting a peak. And but I would think Sean Hannity would want to put the truth if he's putting his name behind it. And with Fox, you would think they would want to put their true narrative out. But I'm not going to be a big fan of the show. I can already tell. They didn't reach out to any family members. They didn't reach out to Stewart, to my knowledge. They didn't reach out to any of us or anybody.
They reached out to me.
They did?
No, I'm just kidding. No, they wouldn't reach out to me. They want you guys. I think you're not wrong. I mean, I think true crime is blown up. It's a real thing. This is a real mystery. It's a great story, and people just want to jump on the bandwagon as much as possible. I'm surprised our buddy Jeff doesn't reach out to him and start suing him.
Yeah.
I
say buddy in a tongue-in-cheek form.
There's a true crime right there in itself.
Attaboy. So we'll have to watch for that and see if we get any response from those people about it, because obviously maybe even help them. Right,
hard to find.
Well, that's what I told them when I left them an email, a voice message, several different times, and I even messaged them on Facebook. I mean, nothing. I mean, and that's what I've said. I'm, you know, I would like to help get the true story about my great uncle out there.
Yeah.
And nothing, and I'm like, so you guys just don't care about the story. You've already got your narrative, and. And they're doing multiple different gang members, not just John Dillinger's
gang. And stories. Gang stories.
But again, how many family members that are associated with each one of these characters are their story going to be portrayed the correct way? Or is this going to be regurgitated from history that is old narrative? And that's my biggest concern is none of this is going to be out there appropriate and truthful.
Yeah, if they were doing real research, they would have stumbled on us. And they could easily find the right answers. I mean, we have all the answers. They just got to listen. Yeah. Somebody's got to listen. So
exactly. And I've been commenting every time I see that advertisement. I put a huge comment in the comment section, and I'm getting a lot of feedback, a lot of positive feedback. What do you mean the FBI is involved? And so, I'm hitting them that way. If I can get like the algorithm of all these people like commenting on my thing, maybe they'll listen finally.
They don't care.
They don't care. No, it's already been filmed. No. It's done.
Yeah, they've already put it together and already.
Yeah, we missed the boat on that one. I mean, they missed the boat on that one because they're not involving you guys. So, hey, FBI Files, that's cool, right? So this new show, the Sean Hannity, we'll have to watch. I mean, it's crazy because, you know, all this stuff is hitting at the same time. Let's take a step back. Go talk about Crown Point and the experience that you guys had up there. That weekend was the christening of my daughter. So I literally had everything going on all at once. Like, I can't even make it up. Like, we had a huge weekend at my church for our festival to raise money. And then it was also my daughter's christening. So you guys went up without me. And
yes,
spoke, yeah, good time.
Spoke to a crowd. Yeah, that's what they said. They said you guys said they had a good time and they enjoyed having you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I had a lot of fun meeting a lot of people.
Yeah, who'd you meet?
I'm just all the new people that are working there at the jail since Emerson has passed, and now the torch has been passed.
And they seem like they're doing a good job.
Yes. And I went ghost hunting at night with the ghost hunting crew that was up there. So,
well, I really want to hear about that. So, I mean, obviously, wait, just go back to our, you know, you guys spoke in front of everybody. How many people were there listening?
Well, they had, I forget, was it 50 at each one of those tour things, and more showed up than they thought. So there was, in that room was probably over 100 people when we was there, and then more showed up.
Yeah. While we were talking, they were putting more chairs out. People were still filing in. So
were you guys able to check out some of the documents that we had been talking about?
We got to look at several different things while we were up there.
So what'd you see?
Well, they showed it. One thing they showed us, which was interesting, the way they brought John over to the court.
Yeah.
From the jail, they had a walkway that was above. So when he come across, he was like on the second floor, and they brought him up and they held him in a cell until it was time to bring him into the court. And then they brought him down. And then when he came down, he actually met his lawyer at the bottom of the stairway. And then they walked into the courtroom together. So they were showing us where he stood, and they got a picture of him up there. And,
And the room that we spoke in was the original courtroom.
That was courtroom.
That's got to be cool.
Yes.
Yeah. You being a cop and your deadbeat uncle in his courtroom. So that's cool. I mean, was there anything in there that you thought would help us in investigating this stuff?
Not really. I didn't see anything that this stood out besides, because I really,
it probably was very Crown Hill centric or Crown Point centric.
Yeah. There wasn't really much beyond the Crown Point incident. I mean, there's a lot of pictures, you know, like the National Guard and all that out front. And about National Guard, when we were going through the files, I found where there was the National Guard General of Ohio was reaching out to Indiana because they had Harry Pierpoint and Mackley or someone, another one of the gangers in Ohio, and they're asking them what they should do to reinforce, make sure John didn't try to break them out after the Crown Point escape. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
That is great. That's cool. And then you were able to talk to about 100 people. I mean, obviously, had anybody come up to you and said, hey, we listened to the podcast?
A lot did.
Yeah, there were several.
Oh, we're sorry, guys. We're sorry. We're listening now. We're back for a little bit here. I think it's a good... We'll try to get Stuart on, but again, he's traveling and doing stuff. We'll obviously get Todd and his perspective and stuff like that. But, you know, in terms of next steps of the podcast, we're just going to do this kind of stuff until we get some movement and traction. Hopefully these books and the, you know, this is like an inside track. This is like a check-in for us with all the other projects we have, including your books, hopefully a documentary one day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anything else that we kind of get word, like you got, this is something that happens on a regular basis. You're getting, you as the Dillinger nephews really get a chance to get reached out to and talk to about new projects all the time. So
it's surprising how far some of those people come to Crown Point.
Why?
Yeah, the one couple came, drove all the way from Tennessee.
There's a couple from Florida.
Yeah, Florida.
How long did it take to get there? Not quick, right? From Florida?
Yeah,
for me to go certain places down there. But
no,
yeah,
I'm just kidding. It's, yeah, it's, I'm just throwing it back to John.
Yeah, I know.
From Florida.
Yeah, but they, yeah, they come just for that event.
I will say a lot of the people that were there were on board with not believing that he was killed in 1934.
Yeah.
So they were a lot. Yeah. Several people were on board with the idea that the FBI screwed up, killed an imposter, and covered it up. So
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, there's other people that, you know, that question, but there was, what was funny is there's a lot of people who had not heard of us, our podcast. And we're very surprised that the FBI got involved when we were trying to exhume the first time.
I mean, surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. FBI's here. Yeah, dude. Well, that's good. The good exposure and all that stuff. And sounds like you guys had fun. Did they have a, what was it, a Terraplane? What's the car?
Oh, the sheriff's car?
Yeah.
Did they have it was there. It's the
sheriff's car.
Yeah, the sheriff's car was there.
Yeah.
And people were taking pictures with it.
Yeah, the new owners have had that. We got to meet them and talk to them after we had spoke, which it was a great experience. If anyone has not made it up there, there are always events up there. They do ghost tours. Like this last weekend, they got canceled, but they're doing like a cops and robbers type of event.
Yeah. Yep.
And but it looks like a lot of fun, and if I want to go back up there, ghost hunt again, because I had a lot of fun. Me and my wife went up there.
Well, you had fun, but did something happen? Did you get?
Yeah,
did you there, what?
Well,
I mean, well, did somebody come up and jump up and touch you?
No, I mean, we heard some.
You would want me to touch you.
Yeah, it was really, it was kind of interesting. We had we heard walking. You could hear walking.
Shut up.
Yeah, you could hear walking through there, and
dogs rattling.
Well, we're standing in the basement of where women's section was, and dog prints appeared on the concrete.
You're lying.
No, my wife was there, and that was very interesting. And then I got blindfolded and did a spirit box session.
Nice.
In the area where they filmed Public Enemies.
Yeah.
Well, so I can't, people do it on spirit boxes. So
it's called an Estes test.
Yeah, an Estes test. So I was blindfolded and I had headphones on. I couldn't hear the outside.
But in your headphones, there's words that are cycling.
Words that were cycled, yeah. Dillinger.
Like a scanner.
Yes, it's a scanner. And it scans all FM channels in reverse. But what's weird is you will hear things the right, correct way. It almost sounds like yelling at some point. I heard a male voice, a female voice, and it sounded like they were yelling at first. The name Dillinger did come up several times.
Shut up. That's unbelievable.
But I don't know everything that was asked. So I have no idea.
Sure, yeah. So you're keep going on this Estes test. We did one at Herb Baumeister's house for the infamous Indie podcast. And we were in that room where he killed and stored the bodies after he killed them in the pool room.
Yeah.
So we did the Estes test in there. And I was on the other end. I was on the person asking the questions to the room, right? Because the idea is Travis being blindfolded and noise canceling headphones on with the scanner running, he doesn't hear anything. He just is saying words. He's just literally like red tambourine, whatever word comes up, you know. And for you, it clearly was Dillinger. And then everybody else at the same time is asking those questions to the spirits in the room, and they can respond through Travis, right?
Yes.
So what did they say anything after, like, yo, that was crazy?
No, they were excited. I'd have to ask my wife more of everything that was said, because I can't remember it all now. But it was they got excited. It was weird. I felt extremely calm during it. I did feel like I had hands on my shoulders when I was doing it. It was weird. Yeah. So I know I felt extremely calm. I didn't want to get out of the session, but they made me get out because they said my first time I shouldn't be under that long, but I was very, very calm. But other people like had different response in different rooms. They, some people like got extremely emotional. My wife, it felt like someone like in her face screaming at her, you know, it, totally different responses. Sure, sure. I mean, I felt like I was at a, you know, in any one of your guys' house, just sitting there hanging out. I mean, that's I was cool. Very, very calm. So, but yeah, I like to do it again. I've reached out to them and I'd love like, if you guys do it again, I want to come up.
Dude, that's awesome. We, I'm always a fan of, more investigation over, even if it's paranormal, but you know, I also am paranormally challenged. We've talked about this where I've just things don't happen for me. So like I do these things, but I mean, the Estes test in Herb's house was pretty interesting. For those of you who don't know, Herb Baumeister was a serial killer in the 90s. He had a house in Westfield, Indiana, and he killed like 30 to 40 gay men. We don't actually know the count. Only 10 have been identified. There's definitely at least 15 to 20 victims, no doubt. Absolutely. There might be even more that haven't been found. That I'm always down to like try stuff and then record it and see what happens. But yo, every time I do stuff, I never get anything. So I'm glad to hear. I'm glad you hear that there's that at least something interesting came out of it.
Yeah, it was an extremely interesting experience. I was asking questions. So a lot of stuff I'd recognized off of watching like Ghost Hunters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because I had talked to Ghost Adventures years ago when they were trying to get me to come up to Chicago and do it. At that time, I really didn't want to get involved in any of that. And but then you know this, I was like, I thought it was all BS.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah, I can't watch YouTube and everyone getting excited and they're hearing like murder and they're hearing all these words. And I'm like, yeah, right. They're gonna be piping that in, and then when I sit there and piping it in, yeah, just piping it in your earphones. And but then I'm sitting there listening to it, and it didn't make sense to me what I was repeating. Yeah. None of it. But I was like, oh. I'm now somewhat of a believer now.
Yeah, dude, something happened in that room too. So yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's a great experiment because it takes a lot of very human variable out of it.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're not hearing the questions. You're only hearing what the spirits have the energy to put through the radio. That's what it comes down to. So cool. Good job, guys. Way to go up and represent. And we appreciate anybody who was listening and went up there and saw them. And, you know, I love that place. I'm going to buy a brick soon. I want to buy a brick. I said that on the podcast. I got to buy a brick. So I'll be heading up there soon. But the last thing that I think we're going to talk about tonight is something that's really exciting that I want Mike to talk about. I started the Infamous Indy Tours. It's a bus tour in downtown Indianapolis. We go through not only John Dillinger, not only Herb Baumeister, but Jim Jones, Tony Caritzis, H.H. Holmes, D.C. Stevenson, Sylvia Likens, Speedway Bomber, Burger Chef Murders. We have so much in the city in Indianapolis. It's insane. So it's a bus tour. It's tickets are on infamousindy.com. This week is our grand opening week, and I couldn't be more excited because I think you guys know this, but the view or the listeners don't, that this are the one of the first times I ever met you guys was I was knocking on your door to ask Mike permission to use John's name in my Infamous Indy Tours bus tour. And this was like 2019, 2018.
Yeah. Yep.
And I wanted to ask you for an interview, but you guys were under NDA at that time because you were going to court. Yeah. So I hope I'm in this fucking book that you guys are talking about.
Oh yeah, you're in it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure I'm in it. Yeah. That fucking douchebag reporter showed up because I was a reporter at the time. I was still at Wish TV, and you guys had been talking to a few other Wish or other reporters that we all know and love that are now not in the market. But yeah, that was one of the first times I came to you. I pitched, "Hey, I really want to open this on July 22nd." I wasn't too far off. It was just about 6 years later.
Yeah. That's how it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the first thing that we talked about.
So yeah, and I think you guys know me well enough that I'm not a bullshitter, that if I say I'm going to try to do something, I'm probably going to do it. Again, it just took me a little longer, time, money, energy, family, the whole nine yards. But I'm in it, and Mike showed up to the first ever actual tour. Like, he was there in the parking lot. He was not only there for the first tour, but he was the first person in the tour. Like, he was front and center. Like, he had his Digging Up Dillinger podcast shirt on. And we brought your buddy Steve. He took some great pictures. But what did you think about the tour when we did it, Mike?
I enjoyed it. Steve enjoyed it. I mean, it was a good deal. I think the people that was with us enjoyed it. And it's interesting going through the city and going to the places where it happened.
Yeah. And it wasn't just Dillinger. Sorry. Say that again.
No, I said I think people will definitely enjoy it.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. I think they did too. Obviously, first run, you know, it was just a concept, and it's very, you know, rudimentary, where we're just I'm just talking. I'm going to have screen on the bus now. I got a screen system so I can play pictures, show pictures and videos at a high quality, which I'm pretty excited about. So that's a nice little upgrade from the last time you were on it. It seems there's another reason for you to show up now, because now you can see different pictures. I'm probably going to talk about our belief that he might not be in the grave. I mean, what do you guys feel about that if I start telling people about that on the tour?
Oh, yeah.
Be answering, get their comments.
That's right.
Yeah.
Maybe we run into somebody. Oh, and then Beryl Hovius, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we were leaving the tour. Were you there, Mike? Yes, you were there. You were there.
Yeah.
And that dude showed up and he's like, I live right down the street and I saw this and I'm literally related to Beryl Hovius.
Yep.
And we were like, oh my God. So right away, we're like, this is already working out in terms of trying to do more research and tell. Everybody's got a Dillinger story. Every single person.
Oh, yeah. You always get a story.
Yep. So we went and what do you think, Mike, was your story that you didn't know about, or what did you enjoy the most that was not Dillinger stuff?
I found Jim Jones stuff. I knew about it, remembered it, but I got refreshed, and there's some things I didn't know about all that. And
you were definitely alive then.
Oh yeah, I remember it. Yeah, we used to laugh about guy on a Kool-Aid at work, and when that was going. But and the Baumeister thing just happened to be my ex Bernal is part of that.
Yep, and then you also have one more connection to Tony Caritza.
Tony Caritza was a guy that I sat and talked to at the Denny's there on Lyndhurst quite often, and then I come home and see him on TV.
He's literally like, I'm taking over the whole, I'm going to get my money back, this guy. So Travis, obviously, you weren't on it, but you're more than welcome. I'm going to invite you guys, and we're going to do one of the first Prime Crime Tours is going to be featuring the Dillinger nephews. And that's what I call you, the Dillinger nephews, because it works.
Nephew and great. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
We are.
Yep. You guys are both nephews, but just in one's better than the other. You decide which one. But you guys come on that tour, and we're going to sell tickets for it, and I'm going to announce it to my followers and people. But if you guys want to learn more, obviously, infamousindietours.com. And then we also have a newsletter sign up sheet. So that's how people are going to find out about these ticket drops, because there's only going to be 11 seats for these exclusive experiences. And they include a drink ticket, some food, and then obviously time spent with you all. Would you be open to bringing a Dillinger artifact of some kind, maybe a real life wanted poster one day to show people?
Yeah. We'll come up with something interesting.
I think baseball glove, whatever.
What? My favorite thing of all time. My favorite thing of all time, the baseball glove. But we can't prove if he was a lefty or righty, or else because the museum won't buy it.
Yeah.
I remember. So as always, you know, this is great to get together with you guys. Obviously big things happening in our life.
Are you going to pick up at the same place?
Yep. We're going to pick up and drop off at Iria's Italian restaurant on College. They got a big parking lot and they said, "Hey Joey, listen, buddy, you can use our parking lot. That's fine. I don't care." He said, "You do us a favor." The truth is I probably brought him $500 to $1,000 worth of business. Oh, right away.
And so, that's a great place to eat and have a cocktail.
That's what I'm saying, dude.
And so, it's very interesting on the inside.
It is.
All the autographs.
They have a ton of autographs. And then they have the Fletcher Place neighborhood has some crime connection back in the day.
Yes, it does.
Mean, that's where kind of the mob and the local. I mean, also, you know, over by.
Well, you know, you are Italian guys.
you keep it down over there, okay? Mr. Mikey the Hick. That's what I call you. You freaking Hicks. You just come from farmland. You ain't shit, baby. No, that's what it is. The Italians over here in Indiana's Italians. The Italian community, the immigrant community was pretty tight-knit. And close, and I kind of go over that history a little bit, but you know the tours are going to expand. We're gonna do some fun stuff and keep it going. So anyway, you guys are on the first Prime Crime tour. We'll make you public enemy number. I mean, Prime Crime enemy number one.
I think anybody that's out there that even thinks about it, they'll definitely enjoy it.
Yeah.
Wow, Mike. Thanks for saying that, buddy. And it was a blessing to have you. And Travis, I do want to say this too because I want to tell everybody too. It wasn't just Mike either. And we did go into the vault where he robbed Indianapolis's state bank.
Yeah.
And then we went to the grave. So to be there with Mike and everybody else that was there, there's, you know, 15 of us, was awesome. But then we had the cameraman who was part of this story, this kind of conspiratorial story that we have about Herb Baumeister. That if you come on the tour, I'll tell you about it there. But the cameraman was there with Mike. So like we had like this direct connection to Herb's story, a direct connection to Mike with Dillinger with Mike. It was just, you literally couldn't fit more bang for your buck in the first tour. I should have just retired after that because it ain't going to get better than that.
I wish I could have been there. I was in spirit. I was in the same city. I was just working.
Yep. Yeah. I was thinking to myself, man, we might drive right by him.
He's working on new crimes to cover.
Infamous crimes of today. Yeah. We will do our best over the next couple of weeks to give you guys something that we're working on. We've been working on it, but we're going to get together and we're going to keep this going. We don't want this to die. Obviously, Mr. Stewart, he will be back eventually in some form or another. I'm always here for everybody. You know, the big map question is always, I mean, that question of the map is always a win. We always want to try to get that answered. Yeah. Why don't you guys over the next couple of weeks, if you come across some FBI file stuff that's interesting that you could share with us, maybe try to connect it back to the map. Like we talked about, circus routes, airplane routes, train routes.
Yep.
Those are all big possibilities. So we're going to keep doing stuff. We just, you know, it's also summer. I mean, you got kids, Travis. I got kids. Yeah. Like, you know, straight up, Mike, you're doing nothing. But you know what I mean? Like,
and that's what I like.
Yeah. And I'm going to come have another Coke with you down at the Dillinger Den. So
the hideout.
Yeah, that's right. The hideout. Sorry. Never mind. The hideout is where it needs to be. It's exactly what it needs to be. So, but I care about you guys. I love our listeners. And, you know, it's good to see you both, the nephews, once again.
Yes.
It's always great seeing you, Joe.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you, buddy. Thank you, buddy. Yeah. All right. Well, as we always say, what do we always say?
Keep on digging.
Digging, baby. Keep on digging.
I got my shovel ready.
Get the shovel. Dig him up, baby. Dig him up.
I'm going there right now.
What's a felony or two? What's a felony?
Just drive in with a big backhoe and get it done.
Just knock that shit out, baby. Let's go. Dig him up. All right. We'll see you next time, folks. The Digging Up Dillinger podcast is produced by Joe Melillo. Theme music produced by Eddie Bandis. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, keep digging.